Sportsnet 650, Vancouver.
Back in on Canuck Central, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. It was quite the trade last night between the Flames and Flyers.
Yeah, I liked it.
How do you think Torts is going to get along with Andre Kuzmenko?
Not well. But it's like who cares? He's here for the end of the season,
yeah.
Right?
And I'm not sure Kuzmenko's NHL career lasts beyond this year.
Yeah, and even if it does, it probably won't be with Torts. I mean, who knows?
Probably not.
But it's clear they have to make the numbers work.
Yeah.
And they'll take on the rest of his contract for this year to get off of, the 4 years remaining on Joel Farabee's contract.
And he has some playing experience with Matvei Michkov as well. So
bring a buddy in for the rest of the year, see how it goes.
That dynamic is going to be funny.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
Watch a few more Flyers games just to see Andre Kuzmenko and Torts.
I wonder if Torts goes off on him on the bench or just like plays in one game and just starts healthy scratching him. Yeah. And he's going to say stuff like, "I love Kuzi," because everyone loves Kuzi. Yeah. He's got a great personality. But, you know.
4 minutes. Oh, look at the stat sheet. 4 minutes for Andre Kuzmenko. Wow.
I mean, because even Boudreau...
Boudreau healthy scratched him.
He did. Now, maybe some of that was part of the conditioning
because
they wanted him to pick up his fitness and all that. But he got demoted to the third and fourth line. Mm-hmm. He got his minutes reduced. And there's a few times when Boudreau said, he's like, if you got to keep scoring. If you score, great. If not, you're not doing anything else on the ice. And Tocchet, we all know how that went. We know what happened in Calgary now.
Mm-hmm.
So the fourth head coach being Torts, is it going to be any different?
Yeah, probably not. As for the Flames, I kind of like the deal for them. Farabee, I know he's having a tough year. Still had over 50 points last year. He's been a good scorer earlier in his career. Still pretty young as well. And, I guess there's questions about the upside of these players ultimately. But you got a couple of young players for not very much going back the other way and just a lengthy contract in Farabee's that you're taking on.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that crazy, a second-round pick.
Yeah.
And a 2028 seventh, which is like the latest, lowest pick that you can give up in a trade, right?
Yeah.
3 years out and, the last pick, the last round of the draft. But I don't know, I think it's fine for Calgary. I'm not sure it's a home run for Calgary. These guys aren't talent.
It's a risky trade, and there is a risk reward to it. And I like when GMs take a bit more of a risk. There's too many coward GMs around the NHL.
I don't disagree. I think it's a fun trade, and it's a fun. It may not work out all that great, and the upside may be somewhat limited. So I don't want to sit here and talk about the Flames might have hit a home run. I'm not sure they did that, but it's a worthwhile gamble, especially if you like Farabee, right? And especially if you like Morgan Frost, and both are talented hockey players. And a second-round pick when you've traded away some guys and have some assets, it's not the end of the world. I like it for the Flyers because you clear the decks beyond this season.
Yeah.
It gives you more flexibility and it gives you more assets. Now this year, they have 3 first-round picks and 4 seconds.
Yeah. Gives them a lot of ammo for the summer.
Yeah, and whether it's something comes available to them now, at the deadline, you jump at it, or in the summer, they're setting up to make trades and perhaps take on some significant money long term.
The other part of the Farabee contract, 3 more years at $5 million per, with the way the salary cap is headed, maybe not going to look that big of an eyesore on a cap picture that is headed towards upwards of $110 million. That's where we go with the open on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the open.
Four! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The open on Canuck Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And the latest is the big news around the NHL today. The salary cap is on the rise. And as Frank Saravalli put it, it's not just a projection, it's more of an agreement between the NHL and the NHLPA, a smoothening of a cap rise given hockey-related revenue being in a very good spot right now. Money is coming into the National Hockey League at a rate they hadn't seen in the past. They're well past the pandemic and all of that caused, So now we're looking at a cap for next year of $95.5 million the year after. So 26-27, $104 million. And then in 27-28, $113.5 on the upper limit of the cap is the current projection.
And you mentioned smoothing, which means the reason they're spreading it out over 3 years is because the cap rise next season could have been astronomical.
Yeah.
And instead of doing so, you're spreading it out a little bit. And it's already going up significantly for next year. And to kind of keep it in line, it's not as big as the next, you know, the following years afterwards. And that also tells you that even though the economic landscape, both in the U.S. and Canada, maybe look different in a couple of years, because of that initial one-year jump, it's not going to affect the cap significantly the next couple of years. So what you're seeing is pretty much what you're going to get. Maybe $1 million or so, right? It might change one way or another, but I don't think it's going to be massive. Like, you're staring at a cap in 2 years that's going to be over $100 million.
Yeah.
It's at 101 instead of 104 or something, but it's going to be $100 million. And the following year, maybe it's not 113.5, but it's going to be 109, 110.
Yeah.
That's what you're faced with looking at here, right? So this is going to significantly change the landscape for a number of teams in the NHL. And I think that's something that Elliot's been outlining. Frank's spoken to us about this as well, that there are teams, especially Canadian teams, that are very skittish about this.
Yeah. And why wouldn't you be? You know, right now the upper limit of the cap is $88 million. By the time they get to the third year of this smoothening of the salary cap, the floor, the lower limit will be around $84 million, or just a shade under $84 million, with this current agreement, this current projection of where the agreement will be. So, you know, for any team, look, and most teams are sort of within distance of $80 million plus spending right now. But yeah, there's obvious questions specifically for a team like Winnipeg. How they're going to be able to deal with that, especially if the Canadian dollar doesn't start to rebound over the next couple of years from where it currently is. Like, it's going to raise questions for, I don't think a ton of teams, but certainly a couple of teams that are more likely to be at the floor of where the salary cap is.
Yeah, I know we've spoken quite a bit over the years about Winnipeg, and I want Winnipeg to work. I love to have more Canadian teams. You know, just looking at their economics, looking at where the league is going.
Yeah.
Like, I've been saying it for a couple of years.
Kind of the same conversations of when they were initially moved out of Winnipeg.
And it's tough, right? So we'll see what happens. But this is going to be really difficult for them. They're going to have to be a team, if they do remain, that's going to operate at the lower limits of the salary cap, which would create more problems for them. You can still be competitive. You can still maybe find lightning in a bottle every once in a while. But you're going to be at a competitive disadvantage because you're not going to be able to spend as much money, which is compounded by the fact that you're in Winnipeg, which isn't the biggest draw to begin with. So if you're not spending a lot of money, you don't have a big draw as a market, it just compounds the issue.
Their current spend is over $86 million. So they're just a little bit under the upper limit of the current salary cap. So they are spending right now, but they do have a contending team. And also, when, you know, what was it last year? They were sort of hinting towards, like, hey guys, we kind of need more season ticket commitments here in Winnipeg,
and
because
more corporate support.
And more corporate support, because you don't want to see what it might look like if we don't get that.
Yeah.
Right? So it wasn't like a blatant, sort of shot across the bow of, like, hey, we're going to leave again.
It was a veiled threat.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it was very apparent what they were doing when they were making sure that they told everybody the state that they're in.
So
they need close to a fill building to survive at where the numbers are right now.
Exactly. So when you get to a cap that's 113, the lower limit's going to be around where they're at now.
Yeah.
So how can you operate significantly higher than
where
you're
at? How are you going to increase revenues? I'm sure they're going to make some changes to revenue sharing to try and help out some of the smaller market teams
and
do some different things.
But if you get to a point, say 5-6 years from now, and now inflation's a factor too, and sometimes, you know, you have to keep that in mind because everything's going up in price, and maybe that mitigates some of it. But nonetheless, do you get to a point where they can't even afford to go to the lower limits?
Yeah.
That's something the Winnipeg's going to have to figure out, right? As far as other Canadian teams, I think Ottawa over some time. A new building is so important for them.
Yeah.
Right? And figuring their situation out. It's great that Calgary's got a new building coming.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be completely fine. Edmonton's been taken care of, right? Montreal is Montreal, and Toronto's not going anywhere. And bring this to Vancouver. Vancouver's not going anywhere. I'm not worried about that at all. The question is going to be, though, will this team operate at the upper limits of the salary cap in a couple years?
Yeah.
Now, the ownership currently, for all the faults they've had, they've always spent to the cap, right? There hasn't been a unwillingness to spend money on the hockey team or on player salaries, right?
Yes.
That investment. I know people want to see other investments too, but that's always been the case. But at the end of the day, everybody has a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how it's going to impact the Canucks. I would imagine as long as the Canucks are competitive, we're going to see ownership be pretty close to the salary cap. But if you start going through a bit of a retool or you go through a bit of a down period, is that where you're going to be somewhat reluctant? Because
yeah.
through their down period over the Benning era until they turned things around and now we are where we are, they were spending to the cap despite being yeah. a team that was near the bottom of the league every single season.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to be doing that if you're at the bottom of the league in the future if the salary cap's higher. But as long as the team is competitive, I would hope that they would be closer to upper limits. But again, maybe in the next 2 or 3 years, but what if the cap goes at 120? Mm. Again, like there's only so much money to go around. At some point, there's only so many external revenue streams you can bring in to your team and you get capped out. There's still potential in Vancouver. The market is growing. There's so many other things going on. But yeah, I mean, the landscape's changing, Reach.
Well, one of the, obviously your concessions, if they weren't already maxed out at Rogers Arena, they might get a little bit more expensive with where things are headed. But kidding aside, I think it puts more onus on the league to really hit a home run with its next rights deals. Because the NHL, compared to Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NFL, relies more on the gate than the other three major sports in North America. And if you can really increase the amount of money you're taking in with your rights deals, well, then all of a sudden, the pressure to have full buildings isn't quite as high
yeah.
for all of your teams across the league.
It's massive. And the Canadian TV deal is up next.
Yeah.
The American one's been locked in for a little bit, but that's going to change. You know, it's still going to open up in a few years. But the Canadian one's coming up quick.
End of 2026.
And so. That was a big deal last time around.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to be a bigger deal this time around.
Yeah. It's $5.2 billion over
yeah.
12 years.
Yeah. And based on the average, it's going to go up. Maybe it won't be a 12-year deal, but how much teams are making in getting every year from it is undoubtedly going to go up as well.
It's fascinating where that will go, but how it affects the Canucks in the short and long term. Obviously, this team has proven to be at or close to the upper limit with their spending on salaries in recent years. So we can expect that to remain about the same and reevaluate as the cap continues to go up. And obviously, like with the cap going up this much, I think you might see, like obviously with the flat cap at the upper ceiling, almost every team was near or at the top of the cap because it just...
Yeah, it was relatively low.
It was low. You had increasing salaries to a certain extent. You couldn't... It was harder and harder to play at a lower limit on the cap given how things were during the pandemic era. But now I think you're going to see a little bit more variance as far as like who are the spending teams and who aren't the spending teams moving forward in the NHL. But then there's, of course, the question of Elias Pettersson and JT Miller.
Yeah.
And how does it change the current landscape of your trade discussions with these players? Does it make it easier, harder?
No, I mean, so I think most teams in the league had an inclination this was happening.
Right.
And maybe they didn't know the hard numbers, but if Elliot was reporting on it, other insiders knew about it and they talked about the cap going up and there's nervousness about, you know, what it's going to look like for some teams in a couple of years.
Yeah.
I think they had a rough idea. So I don't think this changes anything dramatically unless some teams had their head in the sand.
Yeah.
Which again, maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't give some GMs too much credit here, right? So I don't think it really changes anything.
Well, nobody told us the cap was going up.
Wait. I had no idea. Yeah, so I don't think that was going on, but who knows, right? But so I don't see from that aspect. What it illuminates to me more than anything is just what a piss off this whole situation is.
Yeah.
Like I was just mad today looking at it. I'm like, You know what? Like, if Pedersen and JT had their act together and weren't acting like two babies,
this is a great news story for the Vancouver Canucks.
You're like, yeah, I mean, for Canucks fans, you're like, hey, you know what? Like, the cap's going up. Yeah, we got to pay Quinn, but our team's going to be able to go out there and spend a lot of money. They have all this. They have Pedersen locked up long term. They have JT locked up long term. These guys are playing like elite centers, and
by 2027, Pedersen's cap charge will be just over 10%.
Yeah.
Of the cap.
Yeah, and if he was playing like the elite center he looked like, we'd be talking about what a bargain this is going to be in a couple of years. But instead, we're talking about, are they going to get 75 cents on the dollar when trading this guy? And it's just infuriating to me that these two players have this organization in this spot. That their contracts were more than fair at the time. They earned their contracts. They took a little bit less both to make it work in Vancouver, and they just haven't been able to make it work.
Yeah.
And now the organization Yes, and now the organization is exploring trading both guys.
Yeah.
Very seriously. Like, it's not just like, hey, you know, ultimately
these
they'll probably hold on to them.
Veiled threats.
No, dude. Like, you know, as much as, you know, we talk about maybe a JT Miller trade is more likely than a Pedersen trade. Like, I don't know if I buy that anymore.
Mm.
Like, I think a Pedersen trade is just as likely as a Miller trade is.
So I saw JT Miller at the top of the Athletics trade board today. Pedersen had been moved further down to number 10 on the trade board. But in your eyes, it's just as likely either one of them still gets traded.
I think it's, I mean, I would still say JT is probably slightly more likely, but I don't think it's significantly.
Right.
And like we've been hearing, there's a chance that if one goes now, the other one could go in the offseason.
Yeah.
Like, we're in a situation where both may not be here long term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rutherford himself essentially said so, right? And based on everything that's kind of out there, they're very open to it. Now, the Pedersen ask is big, obviously, and they know
well,
they
can't. It
should
can't.
Be. It should.
He's a 100-point center at 26 years old.
Yeah, but he hasn't played like it at all for over a year now.
But, you know, the trade return should not completely crater from what it would have been if you were to trade him at this time last year.
No, but the question is, like, for instance, we hear the Buffalo ties, And yeah, I mean, would they actually consider doing Bowen, Byram, and Cousins if they get a first out of it too?
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, if they don't see a future for Byram in Buffalo anyways, you know, getting Elias Pettersson would be something that you shouldn't be too worried about moving Dylan Cousins for. You know what I mean?
Right. And I mean,
for as good as Cousins, like, that one season Cousins had was unbelievable, but at the same time, still nowhere near the ceiling that Pedersen has showed in his career.
Now, I know Dreger mentioned and others that, you know, Buffalo is somewhat reticent. They want something from Vancouver if they're making that swap. So maybe that's what holds it up. The other thing,
take a hike. You know?
Right. Like, of course. I mean, I'm not even that big on the whole Cousins Byron one, but even with that, it's not happening. Right. But my point being, like, these are the things you're kind of hearing, which has me not very excited about it. But as far as where he may end up, as much as he doesn't have a no trade clause this year, when they signed him, there was verbal assurances made between the two parties that they wouldn't trade him. Now, obviously,
so there may not be a no move clause in Pedersen's contract, but they're still going to honor the no move clause that kicks in on July 1st. To some level? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I mean, so I do think if he ends up, say, in Buffalo, or he ends up, say, in Columbus, and I'm not saying it's likely that he goes to either.
Those are the two teams that have been most closely linked since the Carolina stuff last week.
I think if he really doesn't want to go there, I'm not sure they move him there.
Right.
Because, like, as much as it's a very convoluted, complex situation, right? Because I don't think they're here exploring JT and Pedersen trades if Quinn Hughes was like, don't trade these guys, or don't trade one of them.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Quinn is a GM saying trade these guys, but my point being, like, There's a organizational fatigue about what's gone on, right?
Yes.
And I think that extends beyond management.
Right.
That's why you find yourself where you're at. You know what I mean? So it is what it is in that aspect. But Quinn Hughes and Pedersen are still represented by the same agency.
Right. Pat Brisson.
And if there were assurances made to the agent in between the two parties, you have to at least be cognizant of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You have a big, and we'll talk about the cap of Quinn Hughes.
You've got a big negotiation coming up with Quinn Hughes.
Well, in a second with Quinn Hughes. So I do think it's complex. So I don't think it's as simple as they'll just trade him to Buffalo.
Yeah.
If he's okay with it, then yeah, maybe it happens.
So that's the latest on that and how the salary cap can affect those negotiations. As far as your negotiation with Quinn Hughes, so if you think about, so Hughes will be eligible for an extension when that upper limit is headed towards $104 million, but there's already a knowing that the contract would kick in 2027 when the upper limit is at $113.5 million. So what we're talking about here, if you're thinking 13, 14% of the cap, which is where superstars get paid at, and what Erik Karlsson signed with San Jose, then you're looking at $15-ish million a year for Quinn Hughes, $120 million over 8 years.
Yeah, and we'll see. And, you know, you've been bringing this up, too. Are we going to see 6-7 years as the term limit? Does that change with the new CBA? But nonetheless, perhaps if it's 8 years, $120 million, right?
Yeah.
And the other part of it is, so Karlsson signed for 14.1% of the cap in 2019, 11.5. That means for the cap that's projected for 2027, that'd be over $16 million. So you're staring at, and we'll see where the cap ends up, but the contract for Quinn Hughes is no longer between 10 and 14 million. It's between 14 and 17 million.
Yeah.
It's going to be somewhere in between that. That 3 million range, pretty big range, but that's what we're looking at here. 14 to 17 million for Quinn Hughes.
Because again, the contract would kick in 2027, 2028 season, which is when the upper limit is set to be at 113.5 million. Quinn's going to get paid. He is the best defenseman in the National Hockey League, so he should get paid. Canucks and Dallas Stars will focus on the game. Pre-game show is coming up on Sportsnet 650.